Hello and welcome to episode 534 of Contending at the Water Cooler. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I am joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Joey, let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
Megan?
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin. You can find me online at HeyDudeMeg.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. So this is my favorite time of year. It's not Christmas. It's not New Year's, but it's the days in which I sit there and I go, is it Megan's birthday? Is it Joey's birthday?
It's the answer is yes. Is it
2 days apart? And then I'm like, and do I say happy birthday? And then it's like, oh no, that was yesterday. And I'm like, do I say happy belated
birthday? You were perfect. You were right on time. You're like, I'm sorry, happy belated. I'm like, today's my birthday.
See? For some reason, I think your birthday is the 27th and his is the 29th.
Here's how we remember, though. Remember, you're July 27th.
Yeah.
Right? I am December 28th and he is December 29th. 27, 28, 29.
I'm the oldest, so yes, I would come first there. So yes.
Yes. That's how I remember it. That's how I remember your birthday.
That is astounding. I don't know why you didn't tell me that before and save
Sorry, years of anguish. Clears everything up, right?
That does. It's perfect.
Yeah. It's perfect for the M's. We should change our podcast to 27, 28, 29.
That is so Swiftian of you, and you don't even know it.
Is it?
Numerology.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Sorry.
No.
So happy birthday, belated birthday to you both. I did wish you both happy birthday, but
yes. Thank you so much. I had a great birthday. I don't know, Joey, did you go out and do stuff for your birthday?
Not really. No, I don't really care about my birthday as much. There are some birthdays that I'm a little bit more of a monster and I'm like, it's my birthday. But this year it was so cold yesterday and it was snowy. And like the wind was so bad that Jason and I had already set up to go to dinner at one. There's like a little Italian restaurant that we both really like. And that's all we did. And we sat on the couch and we watched TV and we just hopped around from show to show to show. And every like 10 minutes, he's like, do you want to do something? And I was like, shut up. I'm comfortable with the blanket. I had a string cheese.
That's what I had too.
So it was all good. You could have put a little candle in it and it would have been fine.
I share my string cheese with Jackie Rogers Jr. He knows that he gets it because he'll just go like this. I also want to say I love that I was getting like prescriptions for him today or something, and it's like Jackie Rogers Jr.'s prescription is coming. And I thought, I'm so glad I named him that.
And it's funny, every time I look at your Instagram, Megan, your Instagram reminds me of one of those Instagrams that are like the city about, you know, the people about town Instagrams where you're like, let's go to this new hip club. It's a speakeasy and a library for the deaf and blind.
God.
So it's always, and I saw you, there was one of you dancing. I don't know if you were drunk or not.
So that was my last year's of. I did a little recap of my year and I started it with my last year's. I had a great New Year's last year. I don't remember much of it, but I was dancing to Diana Ross at a gay bar. Oh. And then I took that song and weaved it into my year.
Excellent.
And made a video out of it and all of the things that I did. So
amazing.
I do want to share a quick story that, we were talking offline about our favorite Christmas gifts and I had the strangest Christmas Eve ever because I bought, and this is not a plug, I bought Willie's Remedy Tonic from my mom, which is that THC infused drink. Okay. And I got that for her for Christmas. And I'm like, I want to try it. I want to try it. So after I played the organ, as I do on Christmas Eve, I came home and I put some ice and I tried it. And I'm like, I feel nothing. I'm going to have a little bit more. So I had a little bit more. And then all of a sudden I'm talking to them and I feel like my head just like popped open. And like, and I was tripping so hard. Like, so like I felt like God and the devil were wrestling for my soul. It was horrible. I was like filled with dread, and like I kept thinking, oh, I'm going to die here. Like, I am going to die on this couch. And I was just like freaking out. But I thought, oh, I kind of had my own little like Christmas story, like where I was visited by ghosts, maybe.
Oh,
and
because I woke my up the next fucking day. God, Megan.
I woke up the next day and I was like, Bahoo Boris. I was so happy to be alive. I'm like, I did not think I'd make it to Christmas Day. I even said to my dog, I'm like, what day is it, good boy? And he just looked at me. And I'm like, it's Christmas. And like, so I
it's Christmas Day, Megan.
Christmas Day. So I felt
Boris was like, I don't know, bitch. Don't stop getting high so much.
I also left Joey a drunken message. Or no, a high message. I did. He was the only person that I left a high message to, which I'm glad, because it unraveled very
that yeah very that can get messy.
But yeah,
there was actually was really bad. I have to say about that message, I started it and I was just like, what is happening? And you started to like explain, and it was early, and I was like, I can't listen to this now.
I figured it. I was like, he has not listened to it yet. And I'm like, he's ignoring my hi message. It's okay. I understand.
You guys. We talked a little bit about this before we started recording, but we're going to accentuate the positive here. We're going to, you know, I know Christmas was very stressful and sucky for some of us. And certainly, you know, but let's talk about our favorite Christmas gift. One favorite Christmas gift that you got. Megan, what about you?
My the drive to live the next day. That actually was, because I did think I was going to die. That actually is my favorite gift. Oh, wait, I know what my gift is. It was that my cousin, her boyfriend, thought that I was like 29 years old. And so I was like, that
so a
is
compliment.
A compliment was my favorite gift, yes.
Nice. Joey?
Not the dishwasher. Sorry, Mom.
Jason got me a Rita Moreno doll. Technically, that was for my birthday. He got me a Rita Moreno doll. It's, I guess, a limited edition Barbie that they made. It's Rita Moreno in her Oscar-winning dress. And I'm sure there's like a trademark issue. Like why doesn't she have like a little Oscar with her? She doesn't. She has no accessories. For those who don't know just how gay I am, I started a collection. This was years ago, of dolls. God bless any handyman who comes into my house and sees it and is like, faggot.
You mean the naked male art on the wall won't clue them in?
No, I don't think that's as offensive as me having not one, but two Kate Blanchett as the stepmother in Cinderella dolls. So it's Oscar-winning
actresses. That's a bullseye for homosexuals.
I know.
Bullseye.
It's even Glad would be like, it's Oscar-winning actresses in doll form. It used to be like more specific, Oscar-winning actresses as Disney characters, but I had to expand it. So I have, like, you know, Maggie Smith as Professor McGonagall from Harry Potter. I have Rachel Weisz from Oz the Great and Powerful. I have Lupita Nyong'o from Black Panther. I have, sadly, many a doll. I'm borderline Waylon Smithers. I want it. She's had a new hat. She has a new Oscar. So yeah,
I don't know how I can follow that. Do they have a doll? I have to ask. Do they have a doll of Emma Stone in
Cruella?
No. In the Poor Things.
I would love that.
It's just
they
a naked.
Should.
Or Begonia.
No, they could put her in that big dress that
big,
she's
puffy.
Always. Yeah.
I would love that. I have a placeholder. There is a Cruella doll. Because, you know, Disney makes like insane. I really wish I wasn't admitting this, but Disney has like insane dolls of their characters. And there's one Cruella doll that I specifically want, but it's like $300. And as gay as I am, I can't justify spending that much money on a doll. So I have like a little Funko Pop of her as Cruella.
Okay.
But one day I will change.
I got a lot of very nice things. I got a lot of clothes. My son gave me this Fantastic Four sweatshirt.
That's really cute, actually.
Yeah,
that's
really, I really like it. Because I love this sort of retro futurism vibe that they have going on, and this has
kind of like Fallout. Has the same.
Yes, exactly. Which, by the way, if you are interested in retrofuturism and the production design of Fantastic Four, a simple plug for my recent interview with the production designer Kazra Farahani. Yes. I really hope he gets Oscar nominated, but anyway. But the thing that will, if I look back on Christmas 2025, the positive thing that I think of, and this, of course, it involves the internet and it shifts into a negative. My daughter wanted the stuffed. So a couple of right before Thanksgiving, Taylor Swift on her store put out a stuffed cat doll. It is a exact replica of one of her cats. Olivia is the cat, but it's wearing a cardigan from Folklore. And so it's got little stars on it. And the thing sold out within seconds, and they kept restocking it, and it would sell out within seconds. So I managed to get one, find it on eBay. I paid more than the retail, but I didn't pay, like, some of them were selling for like $2,000. I did not spend a ridiculous amount of money on it. So I took a video of it, of her opening this, and she was so shocked. It was
my
just,
mom watched it. She was like, what is this cat?
Well, so many people didn't. I mean, even her brother was sitting right next to me, and he was like, why is she hyperventilating? Because she literally was like trying to contain herself. It was just a moment of pure joy. And of course, you know, I put it on Instagram, and I was just like, you know, basically trying to share it with family. And I did tag her, Taylor's production company, and her social company. It got viral, and within 2 days had like 85,000 views.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
600 likes. I got 100 followers. I'm like, you're not coming. Like, this is not going to be the content.
Can you push them to the contending? Get them,
I know,
to
right?
Subscribe.
So
we figured out the algorithm. More cat opening videos.
Yes. More. So
more tears, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if we want that.
Of course, this being the internet, it did. Some people started to pop up, and they started to criticize how she looked. And this is a 17-year-old girl. They were saying she opened her mouth very wide, and she and I have very thin lips. So when I open my mouth wide, you can't see my teeth. She opens her mouth much wider than I can, and she didn't look like she had any teeth. And somebody said, well, I was hoping there was teeth in that box for you. And someone said, you need to close your mouth. You look like a doofus, D-O-O-F-I-C-E.
Nice.
Yeah, and so they started, like, there was enough negative comments where she was just like, just take it down. I don't.
Oh, that makes me so sad.
Yeah, it made me, like, it was, so it was a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I got so mad, and I ended up taking it down because I was like, what? It ultimately, it doesn't. Her happiness matters,
right? Yeah,
most to me than nameless weirdos with MAGA beards. And, you know, I mean, sorry, don't mean to be political, but, you know, ZZ Top beards, I should say, ZZ Top beards.
No, they're MAGA beards.
They're MAGA beards.
You can say
but,
it.
But
we're not there anymore.
Why do people who are greater than 50 years old think that they should criticize a 17-year-old girl?
Because because they criticize women, period. It doesn't even matter. It's mostly women online. But it's just people in general. I just don't understand how people, what they get out of that. Like, just like, it is pure joy. And it's like, somebody always says, like, don't get mad at people who get excited about things. Like, it's like, who cares? And that's how I feel. Even like the Disney adults and stuff. Like, I see people make fun of them a lot. And I'm just like, hey, if it makes them happy and they're not harming anybody, like, what's the harm in anything if it makes you happy? As Sheryl Crow would say, you know,
if it makes you happy,
yeah, can't be that bad. So
anyway, so but that's the memory the sweet and the sour that I will take away from Christmas 2025.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But you know, it is what it is. But she was very happy and she loves it. So
that's good. I'm glad she likes the cat. And she's adorable too. You could tell her that. So
oh yeah, no. She knows they're all crazy. I mean, she's smart enough to not internalize it and take it personally.
That's good, because as a teenager that would have killed me.
Yeah.
I'm 42 and that would have killed me. Like, legitimately.
Joey and I would have been like,
she's been struggling for the past couple of weeks, but she's coming on the up and up. So
that's good.
Anyway, very good. So this week we are finally going to have our draft round, our second round draft of the fantasy Oscar predictions. And I'm finally going to post what our predictions are and our point spreads once Joey calculates our points for us. And so throughout the rest of the season, people can go to thecontending.com and follow along as we see who wins. Now, traditionally, what we do is the week of Thanksgiving, we do our second round draft picks before the Critics Awards come out, because we pick in August before any of the festivals drop. Then we go through the festival season and then we figure out what got great reviews, what didn't get great review, what got great reactions, kind of that thing. And then we do some trades and then we go into the critics rounds, and that's when we start scoring points. We did not get a chance to record our podcast for our second round draft selection, so we're going to do that this week, but we're going to do it slightly differently than we normally do. And then after that, we're going to talk about Marty Supreme and Song Song Blue, two movies that opened over the Christmas holiday that we have all seen. And of course, we'll wrap with a flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. So, Joey, why don't you take us into our second round draft pick and talk about how we are making this different, considering we have missed the critics window.
So what I'm going to do is, it's going to be different this year. And basically everybody that we picked at the end of August, we're basically going to kind of double up the points with both brackets that we have. So the bracket that we picked before and the bracket that we picked today. So the way the first bracket from when we picked until now are going to get full points, just sort of like a little bonus of what we have gotten before. But now what I'm going to do for the new round, hopefully I can explain this clearly. So there was a certain point in which we were going to do the trades. That was like right before National Board of Review, before New York Film Critics, LA Film Critics. Once we have made the trades, I'm going to calculate how many points from that date of when we should have switched. And I'm going to go through every single thing, every single regional critics thing, and award points to all three of us with the new picks. Now, in order to make it a little fair, we're not going to get all the points. What we're going to do is I'm going to do a random percentage. And so say, you know, Sentimental Value got 100 points for this whole second date round.
It's basically the month of December, right?
Yeah. Maybe around Thanksgiving going into December. So what we're going to do is I'm going to, in order for there not to be like a giant blowout, I'm going to do a random percentage generator that will apply to all three of us. So say, like, I have Sentimental Value, I would have acquired 100 points for that, and say the random percentage generator gives me 50%. I will take the 100 points, the 50 percentage of those 100 points, I will take that percentage and apply that to my current total. And then from this point out, we'll get like normal points as normal.
Is it a flat percentage across all three of us? Like, we all get the same percentage?
Yeah, just because I was originally going to suggest we do it like we each get a different percentage, but I feel like, I don't know if that would be fair. So, like, I mean, we can do that if you guys want to, but, like, what I would do is I have a little app on my phone, not an app, little website, and then it just gives me So I'll show the screen. Generate. It'll give me 39%.
Okay.
If I do that,
So full points up to Thanksgiving for the titles that we held.
Mm-hmm.
We trade Thanksgiving to New Year's. That's the percentage points. Post New Year's, full points for everything that we gain post trade, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So like from here on out, like after we do the sort of middle section, the Thanksgiving mm-hmm. to Christmas section, that's the weird percentage section.
Right.
And then from here on out, it's as if this weird percentage thing never happened.
Okay. That's perfect. I think that's fine. I'm good with that. Megan, you good with that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Now,
hold on one second. My dog just turned on the television.
Got bored.
He's trying to rent Sentimental Value. Let him do it.
So who goes first, Joey? You're kind of the ringmaster here.
Clarence goes first, then Megan, then myself.
I can't wait. Okay. I have a lot of trades to make.
You do.
Don't know if I have enough qualified people to select, considering the amount of trades I want to make. But the first trade that I'm going to make is I'm going in the picture category, and I'm getting rid of Begonia, and I'm selecting one battle after another.
Oh, you fucking bitch. I mean, great. All right, so Clarence won the whole thing.
So Begonia is free reign for anybody who wants it. And Megan, I think you were next.
I am going into my acting category, and I'm getting rid of Daniel Day-Lewis, and I'm going to pick up Wagner Moura for Secret Agent.
I have what? Wagner Moura.
Oh, damn it. Okay, then I'm going to pick up Ethan Hawke, Blue Moon.
Somebody didn't pick him before?
I don't think so.
Nope.
All right. Megan's got him.
So you had, I'm just running these down, Begonia.
Like how you're like, I've got Wagner Moura, bitch.
I know. Okay, well then I'm going to go into my picture category. I'm going to dump J. Kelly. And I'm going to pick Sinners.
Mm.
Nice.
Thanks.
All right. I mean, I could literally clean the house in my actor's race. First one I'm going to dump is Andrew Garfield.
Okay.
In After the Hunt. Boy, how times changed once that thing dropped. And I am going to grab Benicio del Toro for one battle after another.
Damn.
Megan?
Okay. I am going to go into my film category. Or wait, hold on. I might not do that. Let me pull up what I was.
I think I should trade one.
Yes, I definitely am trading one. I'm going to drop A House of Dynamite and go for It Was Just an Accident.
Mm. No.
Okay. I am going to happily dump Emily Blunt. I watched that. And I'm going to pick up Inga Ibsdotter Lilias for Sentimental Value.
Can't believe I was just thinking, I can't believe none of us have her.
I know.
Hmm. Okay. Well, you took my next one. Thanks, Joey.
You're welcome.
I am going to dump Ayo Edebiri.
Okay.
In the actress category. And I'm replacing her with Chase Infinity, one battle after another.
You're going to have all of the one battle after another people. I love it. It's great.
Megan?
I am going to drop Bill Sarsgaard and pick up Michael B. Jordan.
Nice. All right. This is going to be me swearing. Sorry, I have like 87 tabs open trying to figure out all of it. Okay. I am going to dump. I'm gonna dump June Squibb, and I'm gonna pick up Elle Fanning. If you're gonna have one battle, I'm taking all sentimental value.
All right. My next dump is Brendan Fraser for Rental Family. And I am grabbing Leonardo DiCaprio for one battle after another.
Can't believe that none of us had him. I am dropping. Hold on. I'm dropping Oscar Isaac, and I'm picking up Jacob Elordi for Frankenstein. Anybody there? Crickets?
Yeah,
You could
Joey was
dial
moving
in.
his lips, but I don't think anything was coming out.
No, I was making fart sounds. Okay. I feel like I'm gonna no. Well, don't want to take off any of my other pictures. I think I might regret this, but I think I'm gonna dump George Clooney and pick up Joel Edgerton. What?
So I was thinking about doing that.
I feel like Clooney and Edgerton, like, what you could switch them out back and forth and it would be fine. So I may regret that, or it might work out in my favor, or none of them get in. Ha!
Well, I am dropping from my actor category, Jeremy Strong from Springsteen, to replace him with Sean Penn, one battle after another.
The only person you don't have is Tiana Taylor.
Because Megan already has her.
Because Megan already has her. Megan.
I'm trying to think. I think I'm just gonna drop I'm dropping Springsteen.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. The not the actor, but the film. And I'm gonna pick up Frankenstein. Are these bad picks? Am I doing terrible? Am I doing this wrong?
You're doing, I think you're doing better than previously.
Okay. Because I'm trying to think about, I don't know. I don't know what I'm thinking, but it's a hard game. I think I'm done actually too. I don't think I'm ch making any more changes.
Yeah, I'm locked in.
You're locked in. You're both locked in. All right.
Yeah. So this can be just another 20 minutes of Clarence dropping all of his people. That's fine.
Yeah.
I am dropping Dwayne Johnson, The Rock from the Smashing Machine, and I am picking up Jacoby Jupe for Hamnet because I will get at least
Oh God, you're gonna get breakthrough points.
Does that happen?
Yes. On like regional and maybe Critics' Choice and stuff like
okay.
that. And let me see. I just have one more selection. Well, technically I have two I want to make, but I don't think I have any options. So
can you hear my dog in the background?
Cannot.
Okay, good.
He was trying to give you some sound advice. Who knows?
It's like
let me check and see if something is taken. Okay. I am going to drop probably, I don't know that I'm picking up anything, but I'm gonna drop No Other Choice, and I'm gonna replace it with The Secret Agent.
Oh, damn. The thing is, I was thinking that, and then I was like, I don't want to drop Hamnet, and I don't want to drop Sentimental Value.
Right.
And then I thought, I was like, well, as long as no one else picks The Secret Agent, it'll be fine. And then lo and behold.
All right. Yeah, and then let me check one more thing. I did better with my actresses on my
end. Yeah, I didn't want to give up any of my men. So
And you have Wunmi Mosaku. And of course Megan has Amy Madigan and Amanda Seyfried.
My actress category is pretty good.
Yeah, it really is. All right, I think I'm going to have to keep J-Lo in Kiss of the Spider-Woman. But yeah, I'm locked.
Okay.
Excellent. That was fun.
Yeah.
So
until I lose, then it's not fun.
I'm going to be updating the post. Joey, I will not be able to update the post until you start feeding me actual numbers. So when can you calculate, Joey?
Probably in the next couple of days.
All right. So hopefully by the weekend, we'll have the post up so everybody can see who would be in the lead following the trades. What's our percentage, Joey?
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep just doing, I don't know if you can see it. It was backwards. Yep. Okay, just tell me when. Just say when to stop, and I'll stop.
Showing us.
Stop.
83%.
That's good.
All right. Let me write that down, because I will forget.
So when you go back and you look at one battle after another, for example, one best picture in a couple of critics groups, instead of 100 points, I'd get 83 points.
Yeah.
Just for the month from Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'll figure out when the dates are, and I'll even when I'll like resend it to you guys, and I'll give you like specific stuff. Good. Okay. A project.
Sounds good. I'm going to be hounding you for the points. All right. Very good. Let's move to our reviews of some recent titles. And Megan, this one is near and dear to your heart. So why don't you kick off this conversation with Marty Supreme?
How do you solve a problem with Marty Supreme? Marty Supreme is about a narcissistic man who is obsessed with ping pong, who will do whatever it takes to win. And it stars Timothy Chalamet and has an amazing cast. And it's like a frantic energy to it. But and it's directed by Josh Safdie of the Safdie Brothers, who made Uncut Gems. This is all for Marie. Marie, out there, if you're listening, this is what the film is about. He's obsessed with
Uncut Gems.
Wait, what did you say?
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems, yes. It has a, what an amazing cast. Gwyneth Paltrow, Odessa Azion, the guy from Shark Tank who I interviewed.
Interviewed him?
Yes, last year. I wish he would have told me that he was working on this at the time.
I just found out about it now. When I saw it, I mean. Yeah.
But like, yeah, the cast is amazing. I was struck by it. This is a hard character, and I wrote a piece about this for the site. It's a hard character to like, and I really struggled with, and I love unlikable characters. I love them, but I really struggled with this one because of maybe just Timothée Chalamet's performance, and maybe because it's a perfect synergy of the way he's portraying himself in marketing and the way he's portraying he is in the film. It's kind of like double trouble. But I see why people like it, but I really struggled with it. And I'll just start the conversation there. So Marty Supreme.
So I hear you on this, something, and this is how I felt about Uncut Gems.
Like, I haven't seen Uncut Gems.
Okay. To me, I don't like Adam Sandler to begin with, but to me, everything in Uncut Gems was like nails on a chalkboard, to the point where I could not finish the movie. I hated it that much. Like, it just, wow. Like the people, the way it was filmed, because it's very scattershot and heavily edited, and it just, the whole experience was grating for me. I didn't find anything redeeming about any of the characters. I didn't care about any of the characters, and I really have to have some kind of investment in them. For me, Marty Supreme was a little bit different, because the way I looked at it, and I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just telling you what my mansplaining. I'm not trying to correct you or anything like that. The way that I looked at it was, it's interesting how they seem to be making this movie about a sports figure and the myth of a sports figure, and the fact that a lot of sports figures are a-holes.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of the comedy of it was that it was about table tennis. And it's this scrawny little kid whose ego is 8 times the size of any muscle on his body. And, you know, he thinks he is the best thing ever. And, he's got the awful mustache. Everything about him is reprehensible. His personality is reprehensible. And I found that funny. That particular thing did not bother me as much. I found like the whole thing was, the way that I viewed the film was that the whole film was sort of making fun of him.
And that's probably the way I should have viewed it, but having never seen a Safdie film, I guess.
Yeah.
Send your letters. I was just kind of put off by him. I'm like, oh, is this what it's going to be like the whole time? Hmm. And
the answer is yes.
Yeah. And I also just kept thinking about maybe, and I think my problem was I let the discourse around female characters get in the way for me, because how many times we talked about like Annette Bening's Naiad? I mean, that was the whole thread, that the narrative that season was her character so unlikable. And it's like, she's so much like Marty Supreme. And it is pretty ridiculous to like, for a 60 some year old woman to want to swim it was a channel of some sort. Was it the English channel?
From Cuba. It was from Cuba to Florida.
Yeah. Or something. It was some channel. She wanted to swim that. And like, that's a ridiculous thing. Maybe not as hilarious as ping pong, but they're very similar characters, but I'm glad people are talking about like whether he's likable or not. I can like films that don't have unlikable characters, but I just, I really struggled with this one. I think just because it was so, I'm going to get letters for this one note to me.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to get to what you thought, Joey, in a second, but I wonder if, and I haven't done any kind of scientific survey on this, but of the two women that I know that I talk about film the most with, you and my best friend, you both hated it. Like, my best friend said, I was disappointed that every single person in that movie didn't die by the end of it. She hated it that much.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there is a problem with women relating to that character, or women seeing that character treat the women in the film the way that he does, and then to get that, try to get a redeeming arc at the end.
Did you? Well, okay, we can talk about that. I want to talk about that scene because people have been talking about that scene a lot online, but let's hear what Joey has to say.
First, I want to offer a rebuttal on the mustache.
Oh, come on.
That's why you're starting?
I am not a fan of twinks in general, but the mustache for me is a gateway. For that.
Twink gateway? Mustaches or twink gateways for you?
No, gateway for me to accept that Timothée Chalamet can be attractive.
I mean, if J.K. Rowling had a mustache, he would be like,
no, I will not. Nope. No, ma'am.
If J.K. Rowling had a Benson Boone.
Benson Boone, the other. Don't compare Benson Boone to...
J.K. Rowling and Benson Boone. Wow.
Benson Boone, the bat flips, the jumpsuits, the mustache on board. Anyway, I thought that this movie, I was really surprised by, I don't want to say ballsy it is, because that's not kind of what I mean, but I just felt
what
like
a good pun too.
Oh really? Oh, didn't it? Yes, I made that on purpose. I felt like I never thought that he was supposed to be likable, because he's relentless to the point where in every interaction that he has with all these people, he just, I don't think I've ever seen a movie where someone just, I'm going to wear you down. And I kind of thought that was funny. And I would punch Marty Supreme in the face because he's so annoying. But I kind of, it's that weird thing where it's like, you're a piece of shit, but you kind of get a pass, and I don't know why. That's what it kind of felt like. And there was actually a point where I thought he was going to get everybody killed. I thought he was going to get everyone killed. Now, Uncut Gems. I never need to see that movie ever again in my life. It is so much, but I also think that that movie is met with the sort of film Twitter adoration just because people like it, therefore they have to say that they like it, and then whatever. I'm sorry, I'm generalizing with people, but I think the production design is incredible with this. I didn't realize that Jack Fisk, who did the production, he's never won an Oscar, which is kind of crazy to me.
Didn't he do Flower Moon?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he did. He's been nominated for, let's see, please hold captive people, Flower Moon, The Revenant, and There Will Be Blood. Those are the movies he was nominated for. And he's never won. I was so, and this may sound weird, I was so happy. I was like, when was the last time that I saw Gwyneth Paltrow in a movie that didn't include a Marvel movie that she forgot she was in? And I don't know, something about her being like a movie star and being all like glamorous and dismissive, I was really into. Could have used more Fran Drescher, but that's on my letterhead. I do think there's a lot of screaming. Those two, and this isn't, well, I guess, whatever, spoiler, horrible parents. Would hate to see the sequel to this movie.
Oh, you mean Marty and Rachel?
Marty and Rachel, and I'm going to say it right
Supreme.
Now.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, you know, unless it's a girl. If it's I can't remember if they have a boy.
It's a boy.
It's a boy. Of course, it's a boy.
It's a boy.
I'm going to say Gen Z is going to lose their mind when they ever get to watch Look Who's Talking. Or Look Who's Talking To, or Look Who's Talking Now, and they realize that the softie did not create the sperm going into an egg thing. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't think Look Who's Talking did either.
No, I mean, you go back to Woody Allen to, what's that Woody Allen movie where he plays a sperm? Sorry.
Gen Z is not going to check out of Woody Allen.
Everything you want to know about sex, but we're afraid to ask. I love that Joey's his touchstone was look who's talking.
Look who's talking.
I'm not even ashamed of that. Look who's talking over that Woody Allen movie. I'm not a fan of that Woody Allen movie. I like how I say, yeah, they're not going to go to a Woody Allen movie. Not they're going to, you know, do a U-turn and go to Kirstie Alley instead.
Right,
So I liked it more than I expected, I will say. I think it's very well made. I
think it's very well made, too, and very well acted. Yeah. Like, I do think Timothy Chalamet is great. I think it's, continuing before I jump on that, but.
Oh, no, I just think that I think now that I've seen it, I kind of understand what he's doing more with the press tour. But
yeah,
I think the press tour is obnoxious. And I think the press tour itself will probably polarize people. I don't know how much people, you know, take that into consideration as they're voting for stuff. I don't know. I understand the hype of why people love it. I like it a lot myself. I just felt like he was gonna like reach to the screen and like shake me by the scruff of my neck and be like, I have to go and play ping pong. And there was a one point where like Jason leaned over to me. He goes, all this for ping pong, really? All this for ping pong. Like, all right.
So before we get into the ending, which spoiler alert, we'll get into the ending a little bit. I do want to talk about Gwyneth Paltrow. To me, the other thing that propelled me through the movie was Odessa Azian, who is fantastic in this role. Mm-hmm. I wanted more. I enjoyed seeing Gwyneth Paltrow in this. I think she was very good. I just didn't like the character. I didn't like the way the character was written. I didn't like that she was, this kind of Grace Kelly-esque figure who had abandoned acting and was now, you know, married to this super rich guy. And then she gets back into acting, but she's really terrible at it. It just felt like a third level plot that we didn't need. And that's my major problem with the film is that it is too long and it really needed editing. Like that's middle section where it's like, how can I make money? How can I make money? How can I make money? And all of the like the capers that he goes on.
Yeah.
You could have cut that down pretty dramatically and had a much better film. Especially the bit about the dog. I actually think the dog sequence, you could cut that out totally, completely, and you would never miss it.
Right. I agree. And the tub falling and stuff, there's lots of things that I was kind of like, okay, I don't know what's going on here anymore.
Agreed.
Yeah, the whole time I was watching that, I was like, everybody can die, but is the dog okay?
Yeah,
like,
I know.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Because when the tub fell through and you could see the dog popping up, I was like, is the dog okay?
I know.
I guess I just didn't really understand the point of Gwyneth Paltrow's presence in the film. Like, I liked her in it.
She doesn't tell anything about the character. She doesn't change him in any way. And I think that's probably my thing is that, like, your character has to go on a journey and, like, change in some aspect, and really he doesn't. And although if we get to the end, people are arguing whether he has changed or not.
I do think, not to play devil's advocate here about Gwyneth Paltrow's character, I think she is the only type of character that is not related to him, that is not in his age bracket, that he can still get what he wants out of her. And then he also, there's that scene with the necklace where he tries to lie to her and she calls him on it. Other than really, I mean, he railroads his mother the whole time. The only other person that he tries to kind of pull the wool over the eyes, that is a woman, is Odessa. And I don't know if there's something there. Maybe it's worth exploring as time goes on, but I was just like, maybe there's something there in terms of he can't fool everybody or anyone. So I don't know if that there's something there.
That's interesting. I like that take on that.
So let's let's talk about the ending. So it's a spoiler if anybody wants to save themselves. We'll only talk about this for a couple of minutes. I'll try to make notes in the post so that people don't can reflect back to this and not be spoiled. But we do have a sequence at the end. He has knocked up essentially Odessa Azion, and throughout the movie she's pregnant and he keeps denying paternity in a very malicious and sort of oh no you're a whore way. She's also married. What's that?
I pull out.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like the biggest douchebaggy thing to say. Like, I'm not even a woman, and I can understand and subscribe to the fact that that is a douchebag thing to say. By the end of the film, she has given birth, and he comes to the maternity ward and sees, you know, this is back in the day when the husbands weren't expected to be in the delivery room, and there's the traditional glass window, and there's all of the babies, and he asks somebody to pick up the baby, and then he sobs. And it cuts on him sobbing because he has seen his child. Megan, what's your take on that?
I think it's just like, oh, you know what? I am going to take claim for that kid now because I've won, or in some ways he beat the best in the world. And I took it as, I know a lot of people online are saying, if you don't understand the ending, you don't get it, that it's a joke, you know, that he hasn't changed, and that's the point. And maybe that is the point, but I was just kind of like, your character is supposed to change, and it feels unearned, and that's the way I took it. And I'm sure that somebody will tell me I'm wrong, and maybe I am wrong, but if that's the way I interpreted it, that's the way I interpreted it. But I took it as, like, I won, and now, you know what, I'm ready to be a father. I'm ready to, you know, I've earned this type of thing. And it really pissed me off because I thought this was so unearned. It would have been better if he, I don't know, if he would not have gotten his way. I felt like it was such a cop-out ending. I did not like the ending at all.
Joey, what about you?
My initial impression of the ending was that, and I don't know, I haven't read anything about the ending, so I don't know how far off base this is. But my immediate impression of was that it felt like a performance, that he was even performing in front of a newborn child, because he's, and maybe, I don't know how conscious he is of that or not, but this is somebody who has to project a certain type of, I think she was so upset about what I said, she left. It was
dog changed the channel.
The Cartoon Network. I don't know. I felt that maybe it was, as a young person, thinking, oh, this is how I'm supposed to act when I see, like, my child. And I guess because maybe he has, you know, beaten the best in the world, he can settle down. But I initially assumed it was a reaction to him performing as he has done this whole time that we've been with him.
I really like that interpretation, actually. And sorry, I had to check on my own son who was trying to destroy my couch, and I stopped.
Did you cry?
Did you cry?
When I saw it, I mean, I thought, well, this is, you know, yet another bizarre tonal shift, and we'll be talking about tonal shifts in our next film. You know, I was just like, the whole thing felt like unearned and just really out of left field. I think, you know, Joey, I like your interpretation, but I can see your side to it as well. I don't think that there's enough. Maybe it warrants a second viewing, but I don't know that there's enough information within the film, and maybe somebody's going to come back and tell me, you clearly didn't see it. And I will admit, I got it on a screener and I was folding clothes while I watched it. So, you know, it was one of the, I was Meganing a little bit and multitasking while I was watching it.
And, I don't do that anymore.
No, I'm just messing with you. I don't know that there's enough information throughout the film to really warrant a strong opinion one way or the other, and it is entirely up to your own interpretation of the character.
I think he's a very uninteresting character to me. Like, the ping pong is the only thing that makes him interesting, and maybe that's the point. I don't know. It's there's a lot to dissect. I guess my sister sent me a message, you're wrong, you know, Marty Supreme was great. And I thought, okay, I do feel like this is a film where it's either people love it or really hate it. There's not a lot of in-betweens where, like, it was good. Like, it was kind of just like, oh, you're either all in or you're not.
Yeah. Well, I think that's Safdie Brother films anyway.
Yeah. I liked Mary Bronstein's If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You much better than this one. But hey, I like women. So, I mean, I'm not coming out. I am a woman and I love women's stories. That's going to be the sound like, I like women.
Which reminds me of the end or the last episode that we have seen so far of Stranger Things season 5, where there's this character has this very, very, very elaborate and florid coming out speech, and it ends with "Don't like girls." Like, everything is like very poignant before that. It's like, oh, we all have so much in common. We love baseball cards. We love this. We love that. We do this. We do that. And everybody's like crying. And then all of a sudden he's like, but I don't like girls. It was like somebody just popped out of the screen and threw a bucket of cold water on me. like, what? Although we'll talk about this some other time, but the whole reaction to Stranger Things season 5 is what I consider it to be. I mean, I just what I have seen from Twitter so far was like abject hatred. And I'm like, okay, number one, it's homophobia. Number two, you just hate it because it's centering around the actor that you all hate because he is pro-Israel.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's true.
So, because the show is as good as the other seasons.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's maybe a little bit less coherent. Anyway, we're not talking about that.
Too long. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. 3 years is way too long to wait for that. All right. Anything else about Marty Supreme? Sorry about for the tangent there.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Joey, you love a musical. Song Sung Blue.
I don't like this musical. Okay. So speaking of movies that polarize audiences, people had their knives out for this movie before it even came out. And I'm going to say I have my knives out after seeing it. Song Sung Blue is technically a biopic directed by Greg Brewer. I didn't even know this when I watched it. It's based on a documentary.
Yeah.
Of the same name. It is Hugh Jackman and Kate Hudson play Mike and Claire Scardina, who they meet as celebrity singer impersonators. I think he's originally a Don Ho impersonator. I'm really glad we did not see that. And he gets a suggestion from her that he should be Neil Diamond, I guess because of his hair. And she supports him. They fall in love. They become Lightning and Thunder, a Neil Diamond experience, which I don't know who would want. I don't like Neil Diamond. I think Neil Diamond is just fine. But if I hear Sweet Caroline one more time, I'm going to hurl myself out of this window.
Well, they talk about that in the movie, though. And I like
yeah, that. And I know. I've never agreed more. There's something about... So it's all about their family and the trials and tribulations and people getting hit by cars and all that jazz. Heart attacks.
Spoilers for the film.
That's in the trailer.
The last part isn't it?
Well, never mind. So I was made an off-crawler joke. There's I can understand But I mean this earnestly. I can understand how this movie would appeal to people in terms of this is a movie about, you know, taking control of your life, and this is a movie about doing what you want and you're passionate about and performing, and how when you perform it transforms you and you feel the happiest when you're on stage. I think, well, number one, they should not have put the car accident in the trailer, because I was waiting for it the whole time.
That's why I watched the film, to be honest.
What?
That's why I watched the film. Because of the still of the car accident. I was like, this got interesting.
But, and I was telling Clarence this before we got online, something, and maybe I told you this too, Megan, but I got so, and I guess I won't go into specifics unless we do it later. There is something so, I don't want to say manipulative, but it is so, every time that they were happy about anything, whether they, you know, went to the grocery store and found their favorite cookies, or they got booked to play with Eddie Vedder, as soon as they were at the apex of their happiness, something horrible would happen. And it just felt like a sort of like almost satanic exchange. It was like, you want to be happy? Well, guess what? We're going to strike your daughter down by lightning. That's what it felt like to me. And I felt like this is a movie that is trying to telegraph so much hope about so much stuff. But then it almost, in a weird way, I'm not really saying this, but in a weird way, it was like, better be afraid to be happy, because something bad will happen. It was just so, it bothered me so much. The ending really pissed me off. And the thing is, I think the chemistry between Hugh Jackman and Kate Hudson is great. I think Kate Hudson is amazing.
I think she's amazing. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sounds great.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, good. I think she is too. I think it's probably her best work. I think she's even better in this than she was in Almost Famous, because I think she's fantastic and iconic in Almost Famous, but I think this is really showing her kind of flex some muscles we haven't seen.
Yeah.
Like acting muscles we haven't seen.
Have you seen the guy on TikTok who does an impression of Hugh Jackman singing?
I think I have, yes.
It's like, people make fun of Hugh Jackman because the more, I will defend him because I think he's a really charismatic performer in everything. I love him. And the higher Hugh Jackman's register goes, the more vibrato comes yes. out of it. But there's a guy who does it. I'll pull it up. I'll find it while you guys talk about your thoughts of the movie. But I want this guy who does impressions of him gives me so much joy, but I don't think Hugh Jackman likes it.
Oh. Well, I mean, would you like somebody making fun of your voice?
I think it's affectionate, though, and I feel like it probably doesn't read as affectionate, but yeah. But go on. Anyone?
Clarence, Megan. did you hate it?
I didn't hate it. I'm in the middle. It's the B-est of minuses. Or the C plusius of plusius. Kate Hudson is the reason to see this movie. I still go back and forth. You and I had this conversation. I can't remember if we were on the podcast or if we talked about it offline. I still don't understand. I think she could be holding an Oscar next March if she were in the supporting actress race, because I think she would run away with supporting actress. Because
that's really interesting.
That's a really fluid category.
Yeah.
It is. And I think she's got the narrative. It's been 25 years since her last nomination. She is finally, and she's been good in a lot of things, but she is making good on that promise that she had in Almost Famous with this film. 25 years later, they have not given her a role that has, you know, kind of taken advantage of her greatest characteristics. And this does. I mean, it's, but at the same time, her character is in service of the journey of Hugh Jackman's character. And I don't like the way that they use her accident as a way of catapulting him It's less about her struggle after her accident and more about him trying to deal with it and him, you know, his, you know, oh, I had this, you know, I had this fame, I had this level, and then you had this accident and now I can't get a job. And then that's the way that it reads to me.
That's an excellent point. That's a really good point. And one that I didn't think about, that it is kind of in his point of view, I guess.
That's my problem with the film.
Even though it's kind of masquerading as this two-hander, it's not. It's really his story.
Right.
Which is why the ending, that we can talk about that ending in a second too, doesn't make a lot of sense in a variety of ways. I probably liked it the most out of all of you, both of you. But I see everything you're saying. Like, I think my bar was lower for the, like, sometimes when the bar is low, you're really surprised. I think her performance is great. I really liked Hugh Jackman too. I think that this is a great film to watch with a movie like Hamnet, because it's like kind of showing you,
show you how good Hamnet is.
Shut up. It's like such a bitch. Like the power of art, like how this is kind of like, I don't want to call Neil Diamond low art, but it's like, you know, mainstream, fun, joyful art that is, that people, that it's attainable and people can go to a concert.
And it's a collective.
Yeah. And I felt like there's this joy in that point. And in this mimicking it that I really liked. And then there's Hamnet, where it's finding this joy and artists saving, you know, helping you work through trauma like the other one is in so many ways. I just thought I thought it was an interesting juxtaposition of these two films together, thinking about art that way. But I will say the thing that kind of threw me is that I'm not sure when this takes place, because I was also, you know, I'm somebody who loves documentaries, and I'm like, when did this really take place? And it took place like in the late 90s is when it started, but they moved it back to like the early 90s. So then I was like, okay, this is confusing. Then I was also like, okay, how old is this boy in it that he does not age for like 3 or 4 years? And like, even over the course of, you know, there's an unwanted pregnancy that happens in it. And you're like, oh, wow, those 9 months go fast and that kid is not growing. And like, I just, like, it seems like no one ages. And that was just something that was very nitpicky, but like something that I thought about. But I really liked this idea of the, you know, that at any age you can kind of start over, and these are like 40s, 50s, and that they're making, I mean, they opened for Pearl Jam, which was such a cool scene. I really liked that.
Yeah, I like that.
I just think it's such an interesting story. I actually probably need to see the documentary, because I think it is such a fascinating story. And one that I see why it was a documentary first, but I kind of wish they would have stuck to more of the facts of it, because I don't think they needed some of the things that they do in it. Like, I do believe that, I mean, she is hit by a car outside of her house. That happened. But I also think, though, that it almost did happen twice. I do think that actually happened.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating. But there's the ending is where I'm kind of like, okay, well, you didn't need this.
The ending is so melodramatic.
Yeah.
Song Sung Blue, the documentary, is available to watch in its entirety on YouTube.
That's what, yeah. So I need to do that.
But, you know, it's actually interesting as I sit here and, you know, bash some of the choices in there. Like, there's good stuff in the movie. I think it's kind of crazy that, like, this movie, I just looked it up, has an A on CinemaScore. So the audiences like it. It's kind of...
It's like Neil Diamond. It's a crowd
pleaser. But it's like, it's just like, I can see why they released it at Christmas. It's the kind of, I'm not sure how many, you know, families would be taken to this, but it is sort of a broader entertain. It's an entertaining movie. It's about like triumphing over obstacles and, you know, stuff that is, you know, worth having in a film. It's just like, it's kind of interesting that so many people were so down on it before it even came out because they didn't think it looked good.
Right.
But it is appealing to people. who have seen it. So what do I know?
Well, it's a film that is about a class of people that we don't necessarily see films about, right? It's about middle lower class individuals and it's done in a way where it's not like romanticizing that life. It's just these are people trying to get by, and I think that's why they bring in, like, because I struggled with a subplot about the daughter who's pregnant, but those are things that happen, and it's they're not just showing you these two people who were stars. It's no, they were actually living their dream, but they were also dealing with everyday struggles at the same time. Megan, I accept your double bill and applaud it because everybody should see Hamnet. But I will raise you a double bill of this and A Star Is Born, because I think this story is kind of the, forgive the phrase, white trash version of A Star Is Born. Both films ending in a scene where the female eulogizes the male who has passed through song.
That is true. That is true. Well, I also kind of wish that the film would have, like, and I don't know, maybe I missed this, but like this whole idea of your whole goal is to be somebody else. And I think, you know, that's what always kind of gets me about like impersonators. It's like, oh, you're not yourself, you know, you're trying to be somebody else. And I think that these characters are so interesting that they didn't need to be somebody else, but they like, they're not trying to like, oh, we have an original song that we're trying to get on the air. It's like, no, we're just trying to be Patsy Cline and yeah. Neil Diamond, which I think is fascinating. And I liked that part with the subculture of that in the beginning. I thought that was really fascinating.
I could have had a whole movie about a subculture of impersonator performers. Yes. You know, because there's Jim Belushi and James Belushi. There's, you know, Michael there. Imperioli. And
Yeah. And like that whole group. But that's interesting. So can we talk about the ending?
Sure.
Okay.
Another spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Okay.
So,
I was going to say, I read that, you know, I was like, wow, they're going to meet Neil Diamond and Neil Diamond want to meet them. That's amazing. And they're on their way there and he has a heart attack but Hugh Jackman has a heart attack in the car right seconds before everybody's screaming for them and everything. What an amazing. And like, of course, no, that didn't happen. Neil Diamond never met them, never wanted to meet them, I don't think. Right. And he just, the mic guy just died of a heart attack. Like, I think after they were still performing. Like,
well, he did fall and hit his head.
Yes, he did fall. Yeah. But, and he didn't take care of it like he had in the film. But, right.
I think so.
Yeah. But it wasn't like as heightened as that, which I felt like we didn't need that. Like, I didn't need that. Unless it's true, why include it? Like, I just don't... I feel like a moment like that needs to be true to do it. And I just was kind of disappointed.
I agree. And in a film that celebrates using truth and like, oh, look how bizarre this thing was that really happened, that she, you know, got hit by a car and then she got almost hit by a car again. And there's even a moment of comedy that's reacting to that where it's like, you know, lightning struck twice.
Yeah.
And then to make up this ending or to play with the facts in such an egregious way that is just, it isn't even, it's just really melodramatic and really unsettling. And I don't know, I'm less of a fan of Hugh Jackman. I he's a great performer. You're right, Julie. He tends to the hammy for me, and to give him this kind of platform where of course he has to struggle to go on so that she can get back on stage, even though he's, you know, at death's door, you know, oh, Hugh Jackman, you are a savior and an angel, you know, just come on.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot. I was really interested in the stuff about her struggle with, like, there's that part where she gets up and she falls over because she has her leg, her part of her leg is amputated, and she tells, like, her daughter comes in and she, the way she says it, she's like, sometimes I just forget. And I thought that was, I've never seen that portrayed that way in a movie before. And even, I mean, one of the scenes that is not melodramatic is where she wakes up and there's like haze or smoke in the house, and you're like, and originally I was like, oh my God, the house is on fire. Like, oh my God, like, what's going on? But it's this really, that's a good, to me, I don't know if you guys feel this way, that is a moment that felt very, that was such a sad moment in the movie where she thinks she's on stage and she's performing and she's, you know, a little, is on her medication. She's imagining things. And I just thought that was a really tragic, sad moment that is not played for melodrama. It's played for, like, you know, the drama felt very real there. And the thing at the end, like, I was so angry for like 2 hours about, like, the door to the car is literally open and people are screaming at this ice cream place. And all of these people are so excited for them because everybody knows who these two people are. And then it's not real. And it made me so mad because I was like, he lives until 2006. Like, I looked it up before the movie. I saw the movie. Like, I didn't look it up on purpose. I was like, I don't know who these people are. Right. I saw that she was alive and he had passed. And it just made me, I don't know. It's, I can't really think about how, this might be too far, but I mean, I feel like the whole thing about like having a dream and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It just felt, I felt like they really kind of short shifted that. And it made me really upset.
Yeah. Cause then it also didn't need the ending of her singing to him at the funeral and like, I think that kind of was all like, okay, it's over now. You know, like, since he was so much of the, like, the driving force of the two of them. I don't know. I felt like, for me, the film ended there because I lost, like, not that I lost interest in her story, but the way it became just like, oh, we're mourning him. And that, I don't know. I just felt like the story ended there.
Even if the story would have ended on a quote unquote cheesy note where they were just on stage together and they didn't even think about meeting Neil Diamond.
Right. Yeah.
It just felt like the movie kept telling us that this is about a couple who found each other, who lean on each other, who the best version of these two people is when they're on stage because they feel so much joy and so much like beauty in each other's performance. I would rather have seen them on stage and then it goes black and maybe there's an epilogue and you tell me the truth.
Yes,
that's fine.
Right. Yes. I agree. I 100%.
I don't know. I was so, I feel like you took away my high, not Michigan, this THC high, but the other high. And we're bringing it back. Bringing it in.
Yeah. I, the last thing I want to say is, less about this film, more about Neil Diamond. Neil Diamond has two outstanding songs. I think neither one of them, in my opinion, he's got a lot of good songs. I'm not a huge Neil Diamond fan, but I can admit that he has some really good songs. But Brother Love's Traveling Salvation Show, which is used so beautifully in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, when Brad Pitt meets Mark Qualley's character. And I Am, I Said, which is a gorgeous song.
That is a great song.
It would have been, I mean, and I think Hugh Jackman could actually do a really great job performing that song. I was deeply disappointed not hearing that.
Did they do She's Got the Way, Cherry Cherry Baby? Did they do that one? I don't think they did that one.
I think that's in there. I think it's in the beginning.
I feel like they did.
Okay. Because I feel like I didn't get enough of that one. That's one would've been my favorite. But
at least they didn't do Heartlight.
I don't
turn
know
on your heart light.
Oh yeah,
the E.T. song that is actually not from E.T.
But I do love that they I do love that they focus on that one song that like nobody wanted to hear and he's like, no, we're opening with this. Like, I did love that whole thing. Like, I loved the appreciation for music. It's just like, or for like things that like Neil Diamond's probably like, not, I want to say guilty pleasure, I think there are a lot of people who just love him, but like just this appreciation for, I think, him in general. It wasn't like he was always a Neil Diamond enthusiast or impersonator. Like, she's the one who told him to do it. Like, I just love that he, like, kind of takes it on and really runs with it, and he becomes, and he really just celebrates the artist, and I really love that.
Right. He's a tribute, Ben.
Yeah. I really, it's like being a historian almost. You're just, like, digging into everything, and you're knowing, like, we've got to start with this song first. Like, we're not doing Sweet Caroline, and I love that.
We need to write a screenplay, Megan, about a Fleetwood Mac tribute band that goes through all the emotional beats of Fleetwood Mac, but not actually be Fleetwood Mac.
But it was Daisy Jones in the Six.
Oh, that's like right. That's right. That's already been done. Yep.
I still want you guys to do an educational, the education of Joey Moser in terms of Fleetwood Mac.
The miseducation of Joey.
The miseducation of Joey, and like,
girl,
the
posters, like, you know you better.
No,
I'd love to do that.
I'm more imagining like a Testament of Anne Lee, where like, we're all just.
And then I start twirling.
And bringing out the tambourine, and you got your microphone with the ribbons on it.
Yes.
Good. I just glued some new ribbons on my tambourine. I'll go get them. Can I say, I want to say something really quick about Testament of Anne Lee that is incredibly inappropriate. Christopher Abbott is one of the hottest men to ever live. I'm sorry.
Whoa.
He is. I'm sorry. When I saw that movie at TIFF, I really want to rewatch that movie because it's out now and more people are seeing it. And I want to have more conversations about the movie. But the part in the movie where he was just like, he was like, take me into your mouth. And she was just like, she's like, no, I love God. And he's like, but you're my wife. She's like, no, I love Jesus. Like, there's the one point in the Lightbox Theater in Toronto. I was like, I'll do it. Just, I'll do it. Can I please play you the, really quick, the guy who does the impression of... This is an impression of Hugh Jackman singing a Christmas song.
We can't hear it.
I can't hear it.
Oh, no.
You can't hear it.
I'll play for you later. I'll send it to you.
Okay. All right. Very good. Mixed across the board on both films. Good stuff to be had in both.
I think. Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
While we're... I don't know if either of these films will show up on top 10 lists, but if you're looking for top 10 lists, we'll be publishing them all week. Joey, maybe we'll get to it in January at some point. I did laugh today, Joey, when I saw the draft of your post, and I'm like, can I go back and find the draft of Joey's top 10 films from 2024?
I didn't get to do it. I actually got into an argument with Jason about it yesterday. I was like, well, because I... spoiler alert, my flash forward is I'm going to be watching shit on a loop until I have to go back to work because I want to catch up with a lot of stuff to do both top 10 lists. And I've only seen like 5 movies in December because we've been watching other Christmas things. Movies.
Yes.
And I've gotten into many pointed arguments about how in December now it has been commandeered by the Santa Claus. And every version of A Christmas Carol, and Scrooge is this, Scrooge out the ass, all this other stuff. So yeah,
you know,
Scrooge out ass, is that a porn film?
Scrooge out the ass. It stars the man from Heat of Rivalry.
Where
have you watched Heat of Rivalry yet?
Not all of it. I'm in it.
Okay, so we've got to podcast about that.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
the fag of Christmas past, present, and future.
It's just me going through every single phrase. You know, fag of Christmas past. He's like, oh my god, look how young I look. Fag of Christmas present. I'm like, oh, I feel bloated. Like,
it writes itself.
Fag of like future, whatever the fuck. He's like, I'm dead. I've been murdered or whatever.
The fag of Christmas yet to be, I think, is what it's actually called. Christmas yet to come. Sorry. Okay. Ooh.
Ooh.
All right, leaving that one alone. Charles Dickens spinning over in his grave.
Charles Dickens.
All right. I did not even, speaking of Christmas Carol, I did not even get to watch my favorite version of A Christmas Carol, which is Mickey's Christmas Carol.
I love that one too, but mine's the Muppets. I didn't watch that one this year. I think I could just probably cry too much at that one. So
don't worry, I watched all of them for us.
Well, wow. There you go.
Thank you.
Very good. All right, let's go to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. And Joey, since you've already spoiled it, why don't you wrap up with what else you're doing other than watching movies nonstop?
Watching movies nonstop. I'm catching up with the rest of the short films on the short list. That's it. Just consuming as much media as possible.
Megan.
Well, I am looking forward to the Critics' Choice Awards that I'm going to LA this weekend, and very excited to represent the contending there. And I actually was working on, I've watched a lot of movies over the past week. Surratt, Berlin. I'm trying to get through all the international ones. And so I'm working my way through that. And then I do want to start Pluribus again, restart that. I really love that first episode. And yeah, mostly just Critics' Choice. So I can't wait. I've never been to it, so it should be fun.
I thought you had.
No.
No, she went.
I was
HCA.
Supposed to go last year, but the unfortunate wildfires.
Right. Right. All right. I have been rewatching some of the big films of the year, trying to get, you know, solidify my takes on them and figuring out where they fall on my best of list. Yesterday I did rewatch Begonia, and I have now come all the way back to that fifth best actor slot is so
volatile,
loose, that I think Jesse Plemons could get in, because I think Begonia is going to get in. I think Emma Stone's going to get in. I think it's going to get in a screenplay. Jesse Plemons was a surprise nominee for Power of the Dog. I'm going to predict him as getting that fifth best actor slot.
And I kept him in my fantasy, I believe.
Yep.
You did.
You did. Because he's very, very good. And if you like that film enough to nominate Emma Stone, and if you like that film enough to nominate it, the film itself for Best Picture, which it is showing up on a lot of lists. It showed up on the AFI. Jesse Plemons is right there, and he's so good in that. And I think I think people are underestimating it.
He's like an actor's actor too. So, I mean, it's like the actors love him.
Yeah.
And it's such a complicated interpretation of a character that we would call something of an incel or, you know, like a
conspiracy theorist.
Yes.
Type of, yeah.
Warped by, warped by online.
Yeah.
So my next one is a rewatch of One Battle After Another. Trying to watch it in an echo chamber away from all of the, it's the greatest film ever made, reactions, to see if my appreciation of it increases. TV wise, Stranger Things wraps on New Year's Eve. I will not watch it until New Year's Day, but that is a 2-hour movie all on its own. Yeah. So you got a lot to look forward there. And book wise, I am I'm in my trashy novel era again, and I have decided that I want to catch up on all of the Dan Brown, Robert Langdon novels that I haven't read.
I love this for you.
I've got three, and I'm getting ready to start Inferno.
Ooh.
The one about Dante's and all the clues are hidden in Dante's Inferno.
That the one where they did the movie and Tom Hanks's hair was bad?
No, I think that was Angels and Demons.
Okay.
Because they've only made two Robert Langdon
movies. Yeah, they never did the last one, did they?
Wasn't Inferno the TV series?
Did they do an Inferno TV series?
Am I making that up?
Don't know.
I think I'm making that up.
Well, there was an Inferno TV series at some point, but I don't know if it was I don't know if it was the Robert Langdon. It is. Oh, Singles Inferno, Megan.
Well, I think maybe the Lost Symbol was the one who was turned into it. I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, I've read that one, but I haven't read Inferno, Origin, and the new one that is in every airport I've walked through in the past 6 months. And I can't remember what the name of it is.
Oh, so. The Secret of Secrets?
Yes. There we go. Thank you. So that's what I am going to comfort myself with as we head into 2026. Happy New Year, you two.
I do want to shout out that my 1,000-pound sisters are coming back.
Oh, yeah. Drag Race comes back this week, too.
Yes, that's true, too. I'm hoping to try to find a bar in L.A. to the showing Drag Race. So, we'll see.
Oh, no. However, will you find one?
I know.
Just yell, all right. Homo? Homo?
I'll just go, cool, cool, cool. And then they're like, oh,
homo, homo.
Put up the signal.
Or I'll go hunting.
Just a dildo.
Yeah.
All right. Does that cover it?
Yes.
All right. Let's get the hell out of here. So we are the three M's, the contending co-founders, Clarence Moy, Joey Moser, and Megan McLaughlin. Thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or here on YouTube. Click like and subscribe. And wishing you not only a very pleasant tomorrow, but a very, very happy new year.